Support for KPCW comes from Whole Foods Market, where you can meet the host from KPCW's This Green Earth on Sundance Reel. On Friday, January 22nd, from 9 to 11 a.m., Chris Cherniak and Nell Larson will be interviewing directors in the film festival. For more information, go to kpcw.org.
Hi, this is Dave Bullock.
And Kathy Barker.
From The Story Mine.
Listen to Storytelling at its finest every Sunday morning at 8:30.
Right here on KPCW.
The Park City Ice Arena invites you and your family to our 10-year anniversary party. Back to help us celebrate is Park City's own Motherlode Canyon Band. Join us February 27th for some great music while ice skating with family and friends. Only $10 for the whole family, skating and rentals. Buy any punch card in February and save 10%. We'll see you there for Park City's biggest celebration on ice. Park City Ice Arena is a nonprofit and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Welcome back to the Sundance Reel. I'm Nell Larson. This is Chris Cherniak sitting next to me. And we are here on Whole Foods 5% Giving Day. And 5% of today's net profits will be given to KPCW as a donation to support programs like this. So we are sitting here with an impressive group of four writers and directors and producers, and we're going to start by talking about the film Slight. We have the director, J.D. Dillard. We have the producer, Eric Fleischman, and we have Alex Thier, who's a writer and producer of Slight as well. Welcome, and thanks for joining us. So let's start with you, J.D. Tell us how you landed on the quirky story that is told in this movie, and give us a quick overview of the film.
Alex and I are co-writers, and we wrote this as a short years ago, and I've done magic since I was 11, and we kind of realized that there's this weird intersection between street performance and, sort of the savviness and, street smarts that you see in maybe a kid who does peddle drugs, and we kind of landed on this just this weird story about a kid who's being sucked deeper into a world that he doesn't want to be, but is there because of circumstance. And it's something that, hopefully a lot of people can relate to. But in trying to preserve his innocence, he does have this passion in street magic. And, he can use that as a tool to not get sucked too deep, and has this very peculiar skill set, to just...
What is street magic?
So,
is that different dramatically from
it's basically taking away the stage, taking away that sort of barrier between audience and performer, and kind of it just becomes a very sort of personal thing. So it's something that is very very much sort of in your face, and just like it's much more interactive. And also the other thing with that is all the polish is gone. There's no like white gloves or doves or sort of any of that. It is very just kind of, it's almost like skate culture in a way, a little bit of just grittier.
Yeah, and if you've seen like a David Blaine type, like that's definitely, okay. That's the type of magic that it is. So it's less stage and less, showmanship and much more close up.
And I think you mentioned there that you have always been into magic.
I've done magic for way too long. just one of those weird things where it's like it was this weird hobby that I had, and suddenly it was worth something. So that was kind of nice.
And you said it started out as a short. Was it a Sundance short, or evolved from a short?
It was just a short script that we had written, that we never even got an opportunity to shoot. Just last year. It just made sense that would be the thing that we'd try to turn into a feature.
So you two kind of worked on this initial script together, JD and Alex. And then how did you come into the picture?
I had met JD a few years ago, I think just randomly through drinks once. And then I ran to him at a Halloween party and asked him what he was doing in October 2014.
All good ideas come from.
Yeah. And he's like, well, I was like, why don't you come over to Diablo and we'll finance and produce your first feature film. And the process for Slight was pretty quickly. They came in with the short idea in February 2015. We greenlit it immediately and financed it immediately. They wrote, I think, in a month.
Yeah, it was very fast.
And then we shot in the summertime, and we're done by the end of the year. So it was a very quick process. And JD and Alex, for us, are the ideal type of filmmakers because they're young, they're hungry, and you know they'll lose sleep, they'll bleed for these films, and that's really what makes, I think, in the emerging independent film culture, important to have people like that who give it their all and don't take it for granted.
So tell us about Diablo. You mentioned that's your company.
So, yeah, so I'm co-owner. We finance and produce micro-budget independent genre films. My background,
micro-budget.
Under $1 million. Because usually, if you look at, you know, my background is Blumhouse, which does every single horror movie under the sun now. Before that was Paramount Insurge, which no longer exists. And Diablo is sort of the birth child of both of those combined. So it's high concept genre films, much like Slight, much like Carnage Park, which we'll get to in a minute. And so what we look for, again, is young filmmakers. JD was a first-timer. Mickey and I had done a film before. And so it's, again, coming up with concepts that haven't been told before, stories that haven't been told before, and finding ways to tell them that also haven't been told. So it's again, it's taking the whole filmmaking process, concept, and I think even production-wise, and flipping it and saying, okay, how can we make something different that people will respond to in a way that they haven't before?
And how did you go about finding the cast for something like this on a micro budget?
It's something that it kind of snowballed over time a little bit. We were lucky enough to get some just very sort of quality. Like, we have really great casting directors, so that was the very big part. So our casting directors, Lindsay Weissmuller and Jessica Sherman, they're pretty much any movie on the sun, including Star Wars and stuff like that. So great contacts, great reads, great referrals, and then we had a script that people were responding to. So, Dooley Hill was a very big get for us. He's a fantastic actor. And once we started to get a couple of sort of larger names, then it was fantastic. We got to sort of go out there and kind of look for people. And, you know, we have two different comedians, one from SNL, Sasheer Zamata, and then Cameron Esposito, who's a fantastic stand-up comic as well. But just kind of like a very well-rounded cast that we were excited to sort of get out there.
So how do you describe the genre of this film? There's comedy, all right, you're all laughing, so I know that's a hard question.
We have these little buttons that our editor made. It says magician, gangster, superhero, and it is. It's tough to describe a little bit, but JD.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of pulled back from trying to explain it as a specific genre movie because, you know, we always compare the movie Brick, which we're huge fans of, and, you know, we're pulling from sci-fi, we're pulling from drama, we're pulling from thriller, and... You know, and all of that, we hope we're just kind of carving a little bit of a new space within just genre as like a macro concept. Because, yeah, we're borrowing from everything we love. So, it you know, the final product kind of landed somewhere in between all of that.
And you're dealing with a smarter audience a little bit. So, like, if we're talking about gangster, not gangster stuff, but just some heist things or things. There are things that people are very familiar with. So then to sort of take a step in that direction, but then... You know, kind of like make a hard turn into something else, and just try and fill it out and challenge people to see something new.
Okay, well, let's turn our attention to the other film that's called Carnage Park.
Yes.
All right, and that's you're Mickey. You're the screenwriter for that?
I'm the writer director. Yes.
Writer director.
That's
okay.
Mickey Keating.
So give us a thumbnail sketch of what that film's about.
So in the shortest sense, it's a little bit more kind of hardcore than Slight in a way. Like, it's about a 1978 man out in the desert who hunts people, and so a couple of crooks who find themselves in the crosshairs of that. So it's definitely a pretty intense ride throughout most of it.
So is this, like, I mean, I don't know if the word classic is right, but is this, like, a classic horror film? Like, you are going to be scared while you watch this.
Well, I hope so. That's kind of the intention for some of it. But also, it's, you know, definitely an homage to, like, Sam Peckinpah films, kind of those old 70s crime movies. Very, very Americana in a way.
There was
horribly awry.
There was one review that I saw that... pitched it as a new wave of grindhouse films, been like in the best way possible, which I thought was interesting. I'm curious to see if people...
I hope not.
I'm curious if people think that or not, but it's something that hasn't, again, like much like Slight, hasn't been done before. It's non-linear daytime thriller, which I think there is a need for, in both worlds, again, I'm sitting here on both sides of the fence here,
right?
To talk about stories that again, in Slight, I mean, Carnage Park specifically, which takes... The thriller genre, you break it apart, you tell it non-linearly, much like you would in Pulp Fiction, and see where it goes from there.
Okay.
So is this your first film, Mickey?
This is actually my fourth film. And so first time at Sundance, though, so very excited about that.
And always curious about the setting, 1978. You guys weren't even born in 1978, were you?
We were not, no.
So why that time period? Is that...
To me, it was, you know, because that's like the essential, you know, movement of American cinema. And I think all the movies that we were kind of referencing and paying homage to were in that era of movies. So, you know, it's like Taxi Driver, Texas Chainsaw, those kind of films. We wanted to just set in that time period. Also, I'm kind of sick of watching so many horror movies where people pull out their iPhones and figure it out. And so we kind of wanted to immediately set that barrier.
Yeah, no
make
technology.
It a little bit harder.
Take the technology out of it.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Back to the phone on the wall.
Right. Yeah,
totally.
Back from the dark ages, right, Chris?
Well, yeah, we were growing up. So, so again... First time at Sundance?
First time.
Same for the, all
yeah.
of you?
Yeah, yeah. First time hearing it from
wow.
Sundance. Yeah, for all of us.
Fantastic. Pretty, when did pretty, you get into town?
2 days ago?
Yeah, two days ago. It's been a wild ride already. Like, it seems sort of too good to be true. Just like, we all got in. It's the best case scenario, and that just rarely ever happens.
When did you find out that it got accepted?
First week of December?
I have the voicemail saved. I can tell you what data came in.
First week of December.
Can we play that on the air? Is that a possibility?
It was probably a lot of profanity.
The announcement was about two weeks
after.
November 18th was Sly. November 17th was Carnage.
So not that long ago.
No.
So you're sitting around pins and needles waiting.
For months. Couldn't tell anybody. We're just waiting and waiting and waiting.
And I know for at least like Mickey and I, it was like, oh, we have to finish the movie now.
That's a good point. Because lots of times,
pull yourselves together.
These films are still being polished and finished.
Very much so. Definitely.
You know, on January 3rd or January 4th or
and you have your own sort of like internal 20th. Schedule. You're like, yeah, like we'll do this in January, and then maybe, you know, early February we'll do that, and then it's like, oh, the movie's due in 4 weeks. It's like, got it. So that is. Very different process.
So when you submitted your films, they weren't finished, and they were selected based upon bits and pieces?
They're far enough along to have a good judgment of sort of what's there. So it's a locked cut, but there's no, like for us, it's like no visual effects, no sound mix,
no, you know, color.
No color, all that sort of stuff.
Work in progress.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, the films are, again, Slight and J.D. Dillard. The director, Eric Fleischman, the producer of that film, and the showing.
And also Alex Thier, writer and producer of Slight.
I'm sorry, Alex. And I was looking at the premiere of Slight is tomorrow night.
Tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, tomorrow.
At the library.
Yes.
The Library Center. It's a great theater.
Yeah.
Are there still tickets available?
There are not.
Sold out a month ago.
If you have tickets, we will buy them.
Yeah.
There's an offer.
You guys don't have tickets.
We just don't have enough tickets.
Yeah. They're expected to stand in back.
They're on eBay right now if you want to go buy.
And then Carnage Park is, when is that premiere?
Tuesday midnight. Also at Library.
At the Library.
Yes.
All right. That's going to be great.
Library's going to be home for the week.
Perfect.
All right, and then you guys are hanging around afterwards to see lots of other films.
Of course.
We're trying to.
Yeah. Hey,
whatever we can get into, man.
Exactly.
All right, we have four filmmakers here looking for tickets.
Yeah. Please. Meet us at the Whole Foods. We'll buy them.
Yeah. All right, I want to thank you guys again for taking
thank
time.
You.
Enjoy
thank you.
Good
thank
luck
you.
On your film. Because, hey, just to let you know that every year that Nell and I have our interviews, somebody, at least one film, walks away with an award. And we got five films or interviews. So you guys,
all right. Well, hey, all right. I like those odds.
Those are great odds.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
Leave it at that.
Thank you.
Hey, let's take a break for some underwriters. You listen to the Sundance Reel on KPCW. We'll be back with our next interview. Otto Bell. He's the director of the Sundance Kids Doc, The Eagle Huntress. We're down at Whole Foods at Kimball Junction. Join us here for another 45 minutes. We'll be back right after this.
Celebrate KPCW Day at Whole Foods, a proud supporter of KPCW, on Friday, January 23rd, all day long. Between 9 and 11 a.m., meet KPCW staff and hosts from this green earth on Sundance Reel. More information online at kpcw.org. Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Meyer Gallery, Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, ESCO, and Cushman Wakefield Commerce Commercial Real Estate.
Hello, Park City. I'm Joe Simmons with Park City High School and the Minor Nation Report. Listen every Monday for the latest in high school sports and activities. The Minor Nation Report is made possible in part by UPS Stores, Rich Fine Realtor, Elliott Work Group, and Miller Orthodontics.
Oh, we're back. To KPCW's Sundance Reel, the seventh annual Sundance Reel down here at Whole Foods at Kimball Junction. We're here broadcasting live at Whole Foods because today is 5% day at
5% giving day.
5% giving. Thank you, Nell.
That's the word we were looking for.
I'm looking. There's so many words on my sheets here. 5% giving day. So that 5% of Whole Foods net proceeds for this day will go to KPCW and support KPCW.
That's right. So get your shopping out of the way for the whole week, the month.
But
do it today.
Get your pallet of shrimp here. Do not go down to Costco. Okay? Do not. You need to get your pallet of shrimp right here. All right. Well, we're here to talk about films and Sundance films. And we're here to talk about the film The Eagle Huntress. And we'll actually have an interesting sidebar story. We'll get to that in a little bit because Nell and I interviewed some Native Americans who are involved, who have a program going on. In fact, they have a program going on at noon today.
That's right.
At Kimball Arts Center.
That's right. But we will circle back to that.
But I say we're here speaking with director Otto Bell.
Hello.
And I'm sorry, you get Sharon?
I can cover this. All right. So we've got the producers of the film as well. We've got Sharon Chang and Stacey Reese. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So give us a little thumbnail sketch of what the film is about.
Yes, mate. It's about a 13-year-old girl from Mongolia. She's a Muslim nomad. And she is the first woman in about 2,000 years of male-dominated history to ever take up this ancient tradition of hunting with a golden eagle. So she's overturning a lot of the Mongolian glass ceiling. Let's put it that way.
How did you find out about this?
I spotted it, Chris, on a BBC website. It was a photo essay. And was immediately struck by the photographs and contacted the photographer. And he and I very quickly jumped on a plane and went out there to talk to the family about making a film together.
Really? And they were obviously receptive to it. They were
Oh my
nervous.
Gosh. Chris, we were sitting there, we were drinking tea in their yurt, in their ger, and just talking about the possibility of maybe making a film together. And Dad jumps up and goes, well, we're going to go and pull an eagle off the cliffside this afternoon for Ashulpan, for my daughter. Is that the sort of thing you'd like to film? Absolutely. Yes.
Scrambling for cameras.
Exactly. Yeah, we did. We literally we used everything that
he
we
wasn't
had.
He wasn't entertaining offers from other filmmakers.
Well, though, actually, there was a lot of people circling the story. Oh, a lot of people interested in it. Yeah, yeah.
Right. But you were compelling enough.
I was lucky enough to be I saw it the day that the photo essay came out. And really jumped on it. And I was lucky because over the following days, the photo essay really went viral. It got picked up by Huffington Post and National Geographic, and it really became something of an internet sensation.
The photos are so striking because you see a young, you see a girl, a young woman with an eagle that's practically as large as she is, and you immediately think, what's the story behind this?
Yeah.
How does this happen?
It's a pretty iconic photograph. We actually just used it for the poster, for the key art. Why mess with it?
Right. Yeah.
So what kind? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say those photographs that were part of that photo essay are on Main Street right now at a gallery. We have an exhibition going on, and it's at 444 Main Street. For people, if they want to see them, they can see what inspired the film.
Yeah, and so as you talk about the glass ceiling for Eagle Hand, what kind of pushback was she getting from the town or from the community?
Yeah, it was the elders were, in the main pretty set against it.
Right.
It goes back to before the time of Genghis Khan. This tradition, it's about 2,000-3,000 years old, and it's intrinsically tied to masculine identity and a sense of male identity.
Right.
So they were very anti it.
Right. And so what does she do? What does an eagle huntress do? What's involved in that?
There's There's a lot of training that goes on, and her father, she has this incredible father that didn't, he didn't let the fact that he had a daughter who wanted to do this stand in the way of teaching her. And there's many steps to the training, and in the course of the film, you see him show her how to prepare for this Golden Eagle Festival, where you compete against other eagle hunters, and all of the other eagle hunters are men. And you see that she learns all the different things that she needs to do to be successful, like calling the eagle. There's a special call. And putting your arm out, and how the eagle will land on your arm, and
so you're being judged.
You watch,
by
yes,
that.
You're
it's
judged.
Not just going out and see who catches the most rabbits or the largest.
It has a lot to do with the speed and how the eagle lands, and you know, I mean, it's a beautiful sport, really. But aside from judging the actual hunting practice, you work in pairs. There's a caller, and then someone chases the animal. So, you know, it has two beautiful aspects, you know, an art form and the actual tradition lifestyle.
Was it a challenge to film that, to capture that on film?
It was easy, a piece of cake.
Try to stay focused when an eagle is flying through the sky. I mean, we had a brilliant cinematographer named Simon Niblett, and the cinematography is spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, the eagle's moving at about 100 miles an hour when it's swooping. We were shooting from 100, 200 meters away, and we were shooting with a RED. We shot the whole film in 4K. it's not advisable. I wouldn't shoot a documentary with a RED camera again. But, you're talking about a depth of focus of about a foot and a half. And then when you add the conditions, we were filming in about minus 50 on the Mongolian steppe. I mean, it is punishing.
They're having competitions at minus 50 degrees.
Well, that's actually the final step that she takes, is hunting in winter, and it was a real challenge to film. It ended up taking four times as long as we thought it was going to. Everything packs up, no batteries last. There was only three or four of us out there, so it was pretty full on.
Wow.
So I was about to ask, how long did it take? How much time did you spend in Mongolia filming?
We shot it over the course of about a year, returned about six times, staying for anywhere between a week to a month on each visit. Trying to really... There's three big sort of action sequences in the film. Her stealing the eagle from the nest, her competing in the festival, and then her hunting in winter. But we also wanted to balance out those big sort of soaring sequences with sort of intimate verite. So we lived with the family for weeks at a time just to get a sense of what family life was like and a little bit more of the kind of the intimate family life. Yeah.
Sure. So we kind of talked about that, you know, glass ceiling that this young woman is dealing with. Was there also opposition from the community to being filmed and being, you know... being the center of attention and having this culture brought around the world, or were people receptive to that? Obviously, her family was supportive.
Well, it's a dwindling art.
Yeah.
So one of the main ways in which it's sustaining itself as a tradition is through tourism. And there's a lot of parading. There's a lot of sort of pomp and ceremony to the tradition. You know, the furs, the silver saddles. You know, it's all very elaborate. Mm. So they enjoy the limelight. I think they enjoy getting out the gear and being on camera.
We'll do a quick reintroduction here. We're speaking with the filmmakers of the film The Eagle Huntress, which is actually in the Sundance Kids category. We have director Otto Bell, as well as the producers Sharon Chang and Stacey Reese. So Sharon and Stacey, how did you become involved with this story and with Otto?
Oh, it's a very cute story. Otto and I were introduced by... my lawyer, actually, who's working on the deal. And, you know, I'm really not even an industry insider. I come from a media background, but I'm also an investor, and I'm an architect. So I only look for very unique film projects, sweeping, epic, beautiful things. So my lawyer knows that, called me up and said, I found it. I found the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. So, you know, you got to meet Otto. So I said, okay, let's meet him. And we immediately connected, saw the beautiful footage. right. and got involved. And then later on, the two of us met Stacy. And Stacy can talk about
it. Mine is a great Sundance story, actually. I was here last year at Sundance with a different film, and I was sitting next to Morgan Spurlock at a dinner.
Wow.
And he said, I heard about this incredible film, and we started talking about it. And I was like, what? A girl? And she has an eagle? And
falconry?
What are you talking about? And, you know, we had a couple
minus
drinks.
50.
I was like, I was like, I'm in. And I got back to New York after Sundance, and he called me up, and he said, come into my office. And I talked to him. He's an executive producer on right. the film. And introduced me promptly to Otto and to Sharon. And I, you know, basically was like, please let me be part of this right. film. So.
That's
so
a way.
Talk to everyone at Sundance. I always tell
it's
young
not
people.
An unusual story. I mean, in the sense that that's how a lot of these collaborations start, just by pure happenstance. Right place at the right time.
I'm tremendously fortunate. I could not have done it without these two women.
I want to go back to something you said about part of the. It sounds like part of the training involves actually stealing, or you know, let's.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no,
or
no,
come
no.
up with it.
Call stealing it what
it is, yeah. A baby eagle from the nest.
Yeah.
So she has to do that.
Yeah, she climbs down a mountainside. I don't want to give too right. much away, but yeah, she literally scales a cliffside, and takes a 3-month eaglet from the nest. The good news is it's a very honest catch and release policy. So the bird is never truly tamed. And you'll see in the film, you build a sort of a preternatural connection between mm-hmm. Handler and bird. Over time, a bond grows. But after 7 years, it's Kazakh tradition to return that bird to the wild.
Really?
When it reaches sort of mature breeding age, to continue the circle of life, if you will.
Okay, so it'll be released, and they go back to their natural setting, and they reacclimate.
They're never truly tamed, so it's a very natural, a very easy way back into fully wild life. Yeah.
That's such a contrast to the way that we in the United States, you know, think about like domestic pets, I guess, right? Mm. You know,
right. Once taken out of the wild, they're pretty much imprinted into a different type of setting. Yeah. That they can't be, they would never survive. But here, it's quite mm-hmm. different.
And it's funny that you say domesticated. They do. They live in the house. Mm-hmm. You know, they're literally a member of the family for 7 years. And then it's quite an emotional. We actually filmed a farewell ceremony, and it's quite an emotional.
Really? Wow.
Practice. Yeah.
It seems to
you
me.
You see that in the film. You see an eagle being returned.
Right.
Yeah.
In the film as well.
Okay.
Do the eagles hesitate?
Well, actually, they sometimes the hunters have to wait until it's dark to hide, creep away, you know, because it's a very tangible bond.
Yeah, I think you really see like sort of the ultimate animal-human relationship in this film. You look into the eyes of the eagle, you look into the eyes of Ashopan and the family, and you realize that there's deep love. That's why this film is not just, you know, from a landscape, you know, exotic place perspective, just beautiful, gorgeous. But the human connection, animal connection, that it gets you really deep into the story is very, very poetic. It's a beautiful, beautiful film.
So has she opened up doors for other girls to participate in this? Has that changed? Does she remain the only girl?
It's starting. Some of the other eagle hunters have come forward since they've seen her success, and you know she's teaching a couple of her friends. Yeah, it's a quiet revolution.
So there are a couple of opportunities for people that are here at the festival to come meet you guys and meet Ashopan and her family.
Oh,
can
right,
you
they're here.
Talk to us.
They are here. Yes.
Had a couple of days in New York. They saw the sights, and now they're here. Yeah.
Wow, that's full immersion, right to the city.
Exactly.
And now to this craziness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are the events?
Today at noon, we have a authentic Mongolian ger set up outside the Kimball Arts Center on Kearns, and there will be a ceremony there with the eagles and demonstration with Ashopan, her family, and these beautiful eagles that have come in. There will be demonstrations on Saturday starting at 11 in the morning at that same location.
At the Kimball.
On Monday as well. Sunday is our premiere at Prospector at 11:30.
Right.
And so the family will be outside the theater with the eagles, but we won't be doing demonstrations that day. And the art exhibit of the photography that I mentioned earlier will be up all week throughout the festival at the gallery, the Eagle Huntress Gallery, and that's at 444 Main Street.
Main Street.
So
fantastic.
Please come out and see everything and meet them and welcome them to Utah.
And an eagle, golden eagles.
And, yes,
see
a beautiful eagle.
How huge they are.
And I have put one on my arm, and they weigh 15 pounds. And so... if you'd like that photo opportunity, go right ahead, but be prepared. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, they're like children's fingers. They're enormous.
And it's great that this is part of the Sundance Kids documentary. I don't know if you guys were...
It's the first time there's been a documentary in the kids section.
That's great.
Yeah, why not?
There needs to be more.
Just for grown-ups.
Right.
That's maybe a good point. This is... Did you make this film with kids in mind, or was it just something that the festival felt would be approachable for you?
It was the festival's decision to put it in that category. We're very happy with it. Anecdotally, we've shared it with friends and family, and kids get a bad rap these days. It's all attention deficit disorder and stuff. But when you see a child sit through a movie that runs a buck and a half, 90 minutes, and they're transfixed, and they come out with questions and questions and questions. That was a real vote of confidence to see how children zoned in on it and were sort of spellbound by it. Yeah.
And inspired by her.
Sure.
I mean, she's just a teenager,
Right.
Yeah.
She's
pretty badass teenager.
A badass teenager. That is for sure. But still, they can relate to her. I mean, she's, they're...
Yeah. Right. Well, it sounds like a great documentary. And is this your first time with Sundance? Well, you've been here before.
I have been here before, yes.
Other films? Otto?
Yeah, it's my first feature documentary, yeah.
First feature?
Yeah.
Wow, how did it feel to get it accepted, to get that...
It's anxious, trust me. I'm pinching myself and changing my trousers regularly. Very scary.
That's
a good way to put it.
That's another way of putting it. But and we want you to know that... every year that we've done these events, somebody we interview walks away with an award. So these are all. So you guys have a 1 in 5, 1 in 6 chance.
Great. Okay, we like awards.
From your lips to God's ears.
Exactly. Yes. So next film in mind, you have a. Are you going back to Mongolia?
I have another film here. I'm just going to do a shout out for called Suited, that premieres on Monday, in the documentary competition category.
And what is that about?
That's about a tailor in Brooklyn who makes custom suits, and much of the clientele is transgender, gender fluid, and Lena Dunham is one of the producers on that film as well.
Fantastic.
Wow. Good for you.
Thanks.
Two films. Well, we hope to see you first at the film, but also I definitely want to attend those events. Because, like you say, today at noon at Kimball Arts Center, tomorrow
at 11.
At 11, and then Monday
at 11.
At 11 at the Kimball Arts Center.
And then the photo exhibit is up all week.
All right.
Wonderful. Well, we want to say thanks to this group for joining us. Otto Bell, the director of The Eagle Huntress, along with the producers of the film, Sharon Chang and Stacey Reese. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
And good luck. Thanks. All right, let's take a break. A quick break for some underwriters. Listen to the Sundance Reel on KPCW. And when we come back, we got one more film to talk about. It's the documentary called Nuts. The director, Penny Lane, joins us right after these words from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
The Spur and Grill is proud to support KPCW, located down the alley at 352 Main Street. The Spur is open every evening with dinner, drinks, and live music. The Spur Bar and Grill.com includes music schedules, menus, and contact information.
Hello, Park City. This is Kurt Peterson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services and Peterson Calder Real Estate Group. We're proud supporters of KPCW. For the daily snow report and local ski conditions, tune in to KPCW. And for local real estate and market conditions, experienceparkcity.com.
Don't miss this year's 19th Annual Leadership 101 program on Wednesday, February 3rd at the Marriott Hotel from 8:30 to 4:30. Leadership 101 is an insider's view on how things work and who does what. Whether you've been here a day or a lifetime, you'll learn something new and useful. The $35 registration fee covers lunch and breaks. Register and pay online at parkcity.org by clicking on Leadership 101 or by contacting Karen at 615-5186. Leadership Park City is a not-for-profit program and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to the Sundance Film Festival Reel
Sundance here on seventh annual Sundance Reel. We'll lose count.
Sundance Reel here. We are broadcasting live from Whole Foods Market on their giving day, and 5% of the net sales today will be given as a donation to KPCW Radio to support programs like this.
Thank you very much, Whole Foods.
So with us now, I guess, as I usually say, in the studio, but in the cafe, is Penny Lane. She is the director of the film Nuts, which is in the U.S. documentary competition. Penny was named one of Filmmaker Magazine's 25 new faces of independent film in 2012, and her debut feature documentary, Our Nixon, had its world premiere at the International Film Festival in Rotterdam. She also won the Ken Burns Award for Best of the Festival at the Ann Arbor Film Festival. So, Penny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So this is, when I started reading about this film, I immediately got a smile on my face. Give us a quick thumbnail sketch of what your film is about.
Sure. So first of all, Nuts has an exclamation point at the end of it.
Yes.
So you have to say it with extreme enthusiasm. Yes.
So how do you say it?
I say Nuts.
All right.
Yeah. So no, Nuts is a documentary. It's mostly animated. And it's about a doctor. I should probably say doctor in finger quotes, which your listeners can't see.
That's right.
Who in 1917 announces to the world that he's discovered a miracle cure for impotence, and it is the surgical transplantation of goat testicles, and that is the beginning of the movie.
That's starts out with a bang.
Yes, that's the sort of call to adventure. Yes.
And I'm already uncomfortable.
Sorry.
But that's okay. I will persevere here. That's astounding. Where did you find this guy?
Oh, like all great things, in the public library.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
thank you, the library.
Thank you, what's libraries. Yes. No, it was, there was a book called Charlatan, written by a guy named Pope Rock in, I think, 2007. And I came across that book in a library just literally by chance and was mesmerized and thought, how has no one made a movie about this guy? I mean, because his life is so amazing and the arc of his life story is so incredible, and it's like sort of made for the movies. So, so I kind of committed to it pretty quickly, and it took about 8 years to make the film.
Wow, 8 years.
Yeah.
8 years.
Yeah, but I made Our Nixon in the middle, so, okay. You know.
An ongoing side project
that became
the front burner after a while.
Exactly.
So, all right, so he comes up with this cure for impotence. This transplanting of goat testicles that he figures that he must have done some testing or something. Maybe not. Maybe in that period of time there was lots of miracle cures that were out there, lots of things that were put forward as miracle cures, and this was just another one.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's just like today.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, so what quack doctors do is they look around and they see what's in the real scientific and medical zeitgeist. Like right now, it's gene-targeted therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to go find out, you know, some quack doctor practices today, a lot of them are saying they're doing something called gene-targeted therapy. They're not. They've just heard about that in the New York Times,
right.
And they know that sounds impressive. At the time that Brinkley came up with his miracle cure, you know, hormones were kind of the new thing that people had figured out in science. You know, the person who discovered insulin won the Nobel Prize. People were really interested, but they didn't totally understand how it worked yet. But the understanding that hormones existed and that there were these glands in the human body and
right.
that they had something to do maybe with virility was hot, real science. So he just took that and kind of marketed something that sounded sciencey.
And he was pretty successful?
Oh, he was hugely successful. Tens of thousands of people had this surgery. It cost a lot of money. It cost $750 in around 1917, which I forget now how much that is in today's dollars. I think it's about $10,000.
Right. So five figures.
He was a lot. Yeah. And he was hugely successful. And within a couple years,
he was doing the surgery.
He was doing the surgery, and I think he also had a staff.
Right.
I mean,
okay,
it's kind of unclear what he was doing.
It didn't matter. He made a lot of money.
Tons of money.
And he went on to do all these other, this winding path of interesting things.
Yeah, his life is like a series of crazy inventions. You know, each one is sort of more insanely brilliant than the one before it. I mean, really, the goat testicle cure is the beginning of the story. I can't say that enough times. It's really the beginning. And then he builds, you know, an early radio station in Kansas. Mm. It's the fourth radio station in America. And it very quickly becomes the most popular radio station in America because he was really innovative in using the radio format. He sort of popularized country music very early on, mm-hmm. you know, and then he runs for governor of Kansas. I mean, he just like invents all this stuff and does all these amazing things. It's really quite an amazing story.
And so it's unusual that it's mostly animated because it's a documentary. Oh. So how does that fit in?
Well, you know, it's a historical story. I mostly work with history. And there's certain challenges with that, right? Like you can't put your character on camera because he's been dead for a long time.
he's not up for any interviews.
Exactly. Yeah, and you can't follow him around in his everyday life. And
But there's footage of
him. There's tons of footage. Yeah, right. Absolutely. And I have a lot of great archival footage in the film. But the archival footage is mostly kind of staged or it's, you know, it's promotional. It's not intimate. You know, you don't get to know him as a person. So the animated reenactments came about because I needed a way to let you get to know him, to feel how seductive he is, to feel how confident and kind of cocky and brilliant he was, and to sort of like care about him as a person. And without that sort of ability that I got with the animated reenactments and the voice actor who plays him, you know, he really remains at a distance, and it's easier to sort of just think, what a weird historical oddity. And I didn't want that. I wanted you to really go on this journey with him. Mm-hmm. So that's where the animations came from.
How does that process work?
Slowly, painfully, expensively.
Why it took 8 years?
Yeah, I mean, the last 2 years really were just the animation.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's slow. It's very slow. Because these are hand-drawn, you know, meticulous animations. They're not mass-produced. And I don't have a Pixar budget. So, you know, it's slow.
Right.
We just learned the term micro-budget from one of our past guests. So
I might have. I don't know what that means.
Under a million.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely in the micro-budget zone.
At least, sub-micro. So is there... Does the documentary have any type of, not to give too much of it away, but does it have a kind of a clash at any point, or does he get his comeuppance? Is there a rags to riches element to this?
Absolutely, yeah.
Riches to rags back?
That's kind of why I was attracted to it, because his story is so kind of this, it's this beautiful 20th century American tragedy, you know? Okay. So this is a guy who's born on the side of a mountain in South Carolina with nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the most, you know, abject poverty you could imagine. And through his own genius and hard work and determination, he rises to the insane and crazy heights of fame, fortune, success. But he goes down very badly in the end.
Okay.
Yeah. So he spent, you know, I don't think that's much of a spoiler because, you know, it's history. So you can find that on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know, so kind of similarly to the last film I made, which was about Richard Nixon, you know, it's really his own hubris that takes him down in the end. And that's kind of part of what makes it such an incredible classical kind of tragedy.
Go ahead. Because I guess are there consequences to those who get this transplant?
Have to watch the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have to show up
for
the screening for So I wanted to ask, you know, what was your process very different? You did Our Nixon, which is about such a well-known person. Everybody knows his name. Everybody knows a little bit about him, to somebody that nobody's heard of. How was that process different?
You know what's interesting about that is that these are my first two feature documentaries. And I would have thought at the beginning that it'd be harder to make the Nixon film because I would have said, well, there's a million Nixon films. No one's going to care.
Right.
Here's a new story that no one knows. That's not how the film industry works, actually. It was much, much, much easier to make the Nixon film because people are like, oh, I know what that is. That's interesting. With a film about a new subject, you actually have to convince people that it's interesting, which sort of feels backwards to me. Like, don't you want the new thing?
Yeah. Right.
But no, you want the old thing? Okay. Like, okay. So I actually intended to make this film first, and Our Nixon was going to be second, but it was insanely easier to fund Our Nixon than it was.
And that's
to
probably
fund
what a lot of it hinges on, is just finding the funding to make it happen.
Exactly. Yeah. That's most of my life.
We're speaking with Penny Lane. She's the director of Nuts. Documentary film in the U.S. documentary competition. First film at Sundance?
Yes. First time at Sundance.
First time?
Yeah. First time in Park City.
No, welcome to town.
Thank you. It's really beautiful.
Yes. And really snowy this year.
Is that a joke? I don't know.
No, actually, the last few years it hasn't been. We've had much snow at this time. This year we really got socked with some storms.
So good. It's
you get
beautiful.
To see it. It's more natural state. But so first time at Sundance. And when did you get accepted? When did you find out that the film was accepted?
Right before Thanksgiving, I got the phone call.
And was the film done by then?
Yeah, it was mostly done.
Right, because lots of times we talk to people who are still working.
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you, I'm not in that position. That's very nice. The film was pretty much done in September. So, you know, I'm in optional extra credit land, not like up till midnight tonight finishing the movie
right
land.
Before it goes on
that you've heard, that we've heard of. There are some people. So,
don't I look well rested? I feel
relaxed, you're cheerful, you're upbeat. That's kind of an unusual look around here.
I know. I like it.
So I have to ask, the last sentence of your bio is, and yes, Penny Lane is her real name.
Yes, I'm trying to save you some time.
Am I asking about that? Yes.
So
wait, did you want me to say more
is
about
there a story? Is there a story?
No, I mean, I was born in 1978, so like, yes, my parents knew that it was a Beatles song. Lois was also on the table. I mean, it wasn't like they were massive Beatles fans. They were just like, thought that would
they
be cute.
They just liked the name. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this film, this type, are you looking at other individuals? Are you mining for other films like it or other individuals like this?
This will be the first two films in a trilogy that will all be about these kind of characters, like these 20th century kind of characters. I kind of feel like I'm a 20th century person, and I'm like sort of stuck there, and I just sort of want to stay there for a little while longer. And that time period is really interesting to me. People who were born around the turn of the 20th century and kind of have lives that map onto the historical kind of trajectory of America, I think I can't get enough of it. So I will have a third feature, not next year, or maybe, you know.
But perhaps something that blossomed out of the work you did for this film, finding other people at that time.
Yeah, period. And other characters who have that kind of blend of, you know, there's something where we love con men, or we love, like, kind of sociopaths, actually. Like, you know, this kind of, like, rags to riches, but, like, maybe there's an edge where what they're doing isn't actually good. But they're successful. In America, we kind of love those characters and love to spend time with them.
Kind of setting to the fraudulent nature of people at times.
Well, and what it takes to actually become super, super successful. And there's kind of a question there, like about whether anyone's ever, like, has anyone ever become president of the United States by being a super nice dude?
Right.
Like, I doubt it. With Nixon, we had all these tapes that showed what a not nice dude he was.
Right.
But, you know, we don't have those tapes for other presidents. My suspicion is that they're all kind of sociopaths.
We see a few of them running now.
Right.
One or two.
I'll go there.
You can.
That may be some characters for future.
Yeah, exactly.
For future.
Well, I'm excited to see what you come up with for your next film. I haven't even seen this one yet, but
when's its premiere?
It's tonight at 9 p.m. At Temple.
Oh, the Temple Theater.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it is nice. And then tomorrow afternoon, 3:30 p.m. at Redstone.
Right.
And there's a bunch more after
that.
There's
four more after that around town.
Six screenings.
Yeah, man.
Are there tickets available still?
I think they're all sold out.
Oh, okay.
But I'm new to Sundance, so you guys might know better than me. I think maybe some get released at the last minute. I don't know how it works. But as far as I can tell, they're all sold out.
Hopefully you'll get in.
Oh, I have tickets. I was given tickets for free.
Oh, good for you.
Well, a couple of our past interviews have said if anybody has additional tickets to their films, they're looking to buy. So, you know, you never know what'll happen.
And there's a website.
Yeah.
Frankly.com.
That's right. Yeah.
To go see the trailer or so, learn more about you
totally.
And your works.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps and R. Nixon, too.
Yeah, rnixon.com. It's all there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Cool.
Well, Penny Lane, she's the director of Nuts.
With an exclamation point.
All caps. For obvious reasons, it's the documentary in the U.S. documentary competition, and we want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you. This was really fun.
Yeah, and good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take a. We've got a couple more minutes.
Yeah, let's take a final break. We'll come back to
wrap up and talk about some of the other films we've.
That's right.
So we'll leave it at that. We'll be right back after a couple of underwriters. You're listening to the Sundance Reel at Whole Foods at Kimball Junction. We'll be right back.
Wasatch & Will Yarns is the newest sponsor of KPCW's Classified Show. We offer yarns from Noro, Blue Sky Alpaca, Jade Sapphire, Classic Elite, and more, along with knitting classes for all abilities, knitting accessories, and weekly knit nights. Located at the Redstone Shopping Center, wasatchandwool.com.
Local programming on KPCW is brought to you by a generous grant from Summit County RapTax. Recreation, Arts, and Parks Cultural Grant supports organizations that enrich the overall quality of life for residents throughout the county. Support for KPCW comes from Whole Foods Market, celebrating KPCW Friday, January 23rd. Stop by to meet Chris Cherniak and Nell Larson from This Green Earth as they interview filmmakers at this year's festival on the Sundance Reel at kpcw.org.
Welcome back to the Sundance Reel, KPCW's live two-hour presentation or interviews with directors and producers of various Sundance films. We've been down here at Whole Foods at Kimball Junction for the last couple hours, and the reason that we're here is because it's 5% Giving Day. So that 5% of the net proceeds that Whole Foods generates today through your purchases will go to KPCW and help support KPCW and all its wonderful programming, including public affairs hours programming, et cetera.
That's right. Things like this.
So we got a last couple of minutes. We're going to thank again all of the folks who joined us. But every year we seem to luck out and we get some great interviews with some great films who go on to win awards.
That's right.
And we went through and look at the people we've talked to. We've been fortunate enough to speak back in 2009 to Luis Sahoyos, who directed The Cove. That's a great documentary.
Yeah.
Tim Hetherington, the late Tim Hetherington, unfortunately, and Seb Unger of Restrepo were here. Project Nim. Jeff Orlowski, the director of Chasing Ice.
2012 was a banner year
with
Jeff Orlowski, Chasing Ice, The Queen of Versailles, Malik Benjalul from Searching for Sugar Man, and the short Fishing Without Nets.
I love that short.
It was like, I think, was that everybody that we interviewed won that year?
Just about. And actually, Fishing Without Nets went on to become a full-length film the next year or two. And then 2013, we have Ryan Coogler was here with Fruitvale. The Secretary of Labor, Robert Reich, was here with Inequality for All.
And then in 2014, Alive Inside, we spoke with the director, Michael Rosato Bennett, about his film about using music to connect with older people in nursing homes.
And Alzheimer's patients. Mm-hmm. And finally, last year, we were fortunate enough to speak with Jerry Rothwell, who is the director of How to Change the World, a story about the founding of Greenpeace. And Meru.
That's right.
Jimmy Chin and his wife, Elizabeth Chai Vassarelli.
And there's still a lot of buzz about that film.
Because it's still really good.
Because it's still a great film.
So we just say that.
Yeah,
say,
best of luck to everyone we spoke
winners.
To today.
And so now let's thank the people we spoke to today.
That's right. And first we'll thank Beth Fratkin for booking these wonderful interviews on the show today.
I guess Beth is part of that.
Yeah, maybe she's got the magic touch.
Yes.
Maybe.
But we want to thank Josh Fox. He's the director of the U.S. documentary. Or the documentary in the U.S. competition, How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change.
We want to thank Heidi Brandenburg and Matthew Orzel, the directors of the world documentary When Two Worlds Collide.
J.D. Dillard and Eric Fleischman, director and producer of the film Slight.
Otto Bell, the director of The Eagle Huntress.
That looks like a fascinating
yes.
film. And finally, Penny Lane. She's the director of the documentary in the U.S. Category. Nuts.
Exclamation point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we want to thank again all of those folks for taking the time to come here and talk to us. And, of course, we want to thank Mark Miller Subaru. Love the experience at markmillersubaru.com. Again, thanks for joining us here at the Sundance Reel. That's it.
That's right. Until next year.
And we'll be podcasting this show, and you can see a replay on the website, kpcw.org. Thanks again for joining us. We'll take it back to the studio. A couple more underwriters, and NPR News is coming up. Thanks.
Big thank you to Chris and Nell for the Sundance Reel. Listen to the Sundance Reel tomorrow with our own Rick Bruff to continue all things about Sundance. You are listening to KPCW Park City at 91.9 and 88.1 FM across the Wasatch Back. We're also streaming live on kpcw.org and on the NPR Stitcher and TuneIn apps. National Public Radio News coming your way.